Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Thursday, the 4th of March, 2021. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. Petersburg is among the top hotspots for COVID-19 cases in the country, according to the New York Times. An online interactive map published by the newspaper shows Petersburg Borough with the fourth highest daily average of new COVID cases per capita for counties in the nation in the past week. In that time, Petersburg trails only three counties in Colorado, Kentucky, and Oklahoma for average daily COVID cases per 100,000 people. This community of about 3,200 people hit its highest active COVID-19 case count since the start of the pandemic on both Tuesday and yesterday. Petersburg's Emergency Operations Center reported active cases at 67 yesterday. That number reflects two new cases reported yesterday. In addition, two more cases reported for the day before, driving the active case count for both days to 67. Also, two more people listed as recovered Wednesday as well. Since February 18th, local health officials have reported a total of 85 in-town cases. Another four cases are local residents who've been outside of Petersburg, and 22 people are considered recovered since the start of this outbreak. Schools have been on remote learning mode, and kids' activities shut down during the outbreak as well. Plant managers at OBI Seafoods wrote a commentary in the pilot this week calling on the community to follow health precautions so the local workforce can continue to process seafood. Case numbers have been relatively low for most of the pandemic until last month. All but five of the cases reported have been in people who have not yet received either a first or second dose of vaccine. Petersburg Medical Center reports positive test results for two people who are fully vaccinated. That's 2 weeks past their second dose. And three positive cases in people who are 2 weeks past their first dose. And the community, like others in Alaska, is also well above many others in parts of the country, other parts of the country, in vaccination rates. Well over a third of Petersburg's population has received one dose, and around one-fifth of the total population is fully vaccinated. And those numbers are set to climb this month as well. The medical center plans more vaccine clinics tomorrow and on March 12th. Masks are now required in Wrangell's indoor public spaces. As Sage Smiley reports, city officials there say the measure is the best way to keep that city open for business. As Southeast Alaska's COVID risk level remains high, with school kids on distance learning until at least March 8th.
Anyone in an indoor public space in Wrangell now has to wear a face covering. Violators can be fined $25. City Manager Lisa Von Bargen on Tuesday defended the new rule amidst a handful of residents who were hostile to the measure.
This isn't about scare tactics. This is about keeping the virus at bay so that we can continue to operate normally. We're not suggesting any closures. We're not suggesting that business be done any different.
And there was pushback from four community members who showed up to speak.
Much like many others, I have a hard time being told what to do, especially when the rationale does not make sense.
That's DJ McConaughey. His father is leading an effort to try and recall Wrangell's mayor over perceived legal issues with the meeting where the assembly passed a mask mandate last year. Morgan Sanford also framed the public health debate as a power grab.
You have continued to prove that this is not about health, this is about control, which you obviously don't want to give up. You continue to pretend that you have our best interests in mind while you attempt to strip us down of every liberty and freedom.
The city manager replied that she can understand people's frustration and fatigue with living through a pandemic.
And if I could wave a magic wand and get rid of it, you can darn sure bet your whatever that I would.
Wrangell Mayor Steve Prasunka says he's spoken to city leaders grappling with a widespread outbreak just 50 miles away.
This has devastated Petersburg. They went from a few cases to 60 plus cases in no time. They went from everything wide open to everything absolutely shut down. Schools are shut down. City facilities are shut down. Everything is shut down. And I read somewhere on Facebook, somebody said, yeah, look, they had a bunch of this stuff in place and it didn't do any good. Well, it didn't do any good because people weren't following it. That's why it didn't do any good.
Assemblymember Patty Gilbert says she understood that many in the community are opposed to requiring masks. but she says it's in everyone's best interest.
I do realize that I'm going to lose some friends, but in my heart of hearts, I want to do the right thing for the community.
Zach Taylor was one of two community members who spoke in favor of a mask mandate. He says it's necessary to repair the island's visitor economy.
I personally last year did zero sales in my tour business. I'm down tens of thousands of dollars of lost income from last year. With the lack of cruise ships expected this year, I will probably be closing my doors permanently if we don't get independent travelers.
Assemblymember Terry Corson was the lone vote against.
I think the mandate is inappropriate for government to come in and mandate that someone wear a mask. Noticing the outrage from all the emails that have been forwarded and counting those up along with the, looks like four dissenters, it looks like the majority of the population, assuming that's everybody that would voice their opinion tonight, I just cannot see the justification in this.
Corson also voted against requiring visitors arriving from out of state to get tested and quarantine pending results. There's no penalty for not following the rule, but the ordinance on the books requires a negative test result upon arrival. Those without are required to quarantine pending a test at the airport and follow-up test at least 5 days after arrival. Alaska residents will have the option of quarantining for 14 days if they don't want to be tested. Rengel's reinstated mask mandate, testing, and quarantine requirements sunset on April 13th. In Rengel, I'm Sage Smiley.
And elsewhere, it's going to be easier for independent travelers to visit Juneau after that city's assembly voted Monday night to relax travel requirements. That's welcome news for the tourism industry, which is looking forward to some business from independent travelers this year. The busy cruise ship season, which usually brings the bulk of that city's visitors, is on hold while Canada's waters are closed to cruise ships. The new changes don't mean Juneau's lifting all its requirements, but they are meant to be encouraging for COVID-conscious travelers. Starting this week, Juneau's waiving a $250 testing fee for non-residents at that city's airport. In addition, travelers who've been fully vaccinated for at least 2 weeks and don't show symptoms are not required to socially distance for 5 days after they arrive. Travelers to Juneau still required to test before they travel and arrive with a proof of a negative result, or they can get tested upon arrival and a strict social distance while they wait for results. And May 1st, travelers there, vaccinated or not, won't be required to test at Juneau's airport or follow strict social distancing guidelines, but travelers still must register on the state of Alaska's travel portal. Juneau City Manager Rory Watt said it at the assembly meeting that city, quote, won't be shy about letting the community know if plans need to change. Juneau currently at alert level 1, the lowest risk level for COVID-19 in that community. Next Monday, March 8th, is International Women's Day. The U.S. began recognizing the holiday in recent years, but many other countries have been celebrating it for decades. In Petersburg, Working Against Violence for Everyone, also known as WAVE, bringing the holiday to light this year as an opportunity for the community to come together. KFSK's Angela Denning has more.
The purpose of International Women's Day is pretty simple. It celebrates equality in the women of the world, from the stay-at-home moms to the business leaders. Annette Bennett is WAVE's director.
It's not very known in the U.S. as opposed to other countries where they do have pretty big celebrations of this day and their own kind of unique take on things, which I think is really cool.
In a conversation with several WAVE workers, they told me that Petersburg is filled with strong women, whether it's encouraged from Tlingit matrilineal culture or the Norwegian women who ran the town while the men were out fishing. At least traditionally. Bennett grew up in Petersburg and says she didn't know anything could be different.
Growing up here, I didn't realize that was unique until I moved out of the state and realizing that, oh, you think I'm maybe not supposed to do things because I'm a woman. And it never occurred to me before then.
Hillary Hunter echoes that sentiment. She's one of WAVE's advocates and also grew up in Petersburg, a place where she says everyone pitches in, no matter your gender.
I didn't realize how fortunate I was to grow up with that until I went somewhere else.
Certainly, not everywhere is the same. According to the United Nations website, 49 countries do not have laws protecting women from domestic violence, and 750 million women and girls were married before age 18. But dozens of countries do celebrate women during International Women's Day, countries like Madagascar in East Africa. Hunter experienced it there while she was teaching in the Peace Corps. She says it was recognized as a national holiday, and all the women had the day off. In the morning, they would clean places in the community, and in the afternoon, celebrate at the community hall.
There was a big party there. The whole town would go. There was loud music playing. The women would all sing together and dance. And there was a lot of fried food that was brought around on platters and passed out.
Stephanie Akins is WAVE's office coordinator. She says she likes to see women taking on roles that are traditionally more associated with men.
I have my firefighter certificate, and that's something I carry with pride. And it's really cool to see that I'm not the only one. I have a lot of friends who have done the same.
But breaking the molds can have its challenges. It can sometimes mean that women do all the time, says Bennett.
We do all those things, and then we're also expected to figure out what's for dinner.
Right.
So there's still that balance of...
And just using the word feminist can sometimes get misconstrued.
When you're a feminist, you're not saying women are amazing and men are horrible. It's about equality, and that's something that a lot of people don't understand.
Stereotypes can go both ways, the WAVE workers say. Men should also have the right to stay home with the kids if that's what works best for the family. But International Women's Day does not have to fix all inequality. It can simply be just a day to recognize how far women have come. Heather Fagan, another WAVE advocate, says she sees it as a day to celebrate voting rights and getting women in the workforce.
Men have always had a voice, whereas women haven't. And we're celebrating the fact that we found it and we're working towards a more equal society.
Bennett says it's an opportunity for the community to come together and decide how locals want to celebrate the day. And then in 8 months, it's International Men's Day, November 19th. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
WAVE will be hosting an online chat about International Women's Day next Monday from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. You can see details checking out the event on Facebook or find a link on our website, kfsk.org. Also Monday, we'll be hosting an International Women's Day call-in show from 10 to 10:30. People can recognize important women in their lives. In future newscasts, we'll be hearing from some of the women here in Petersburg who come from countries that do celebrate International Women's Day as well. In other news from around Southeast, thousands of library books, some of them rare, are in cold storage after a sprinkler pipe burst on the University of Alaska Southeast Ketchikan campus. As Maria Dudzak reports, college librarians are going to great lengths to salvage items from the collection.
Freezing temperatures in Ketchikan brought the mercury down to single digits at night and in the 20s during the day in Ketchikan in early February. That's thought to have caused a pipe to burst on the top floor of UAS's Ziegler building, with water flooding down to the second floor that houses the library and student center, says campus business manager Chris Hoyt.
And it soaked the library, a good portion of the library, and a good portion of the collection of books and the flooring. And we lost ceiling tile in that space, and the water continued through the roof panels and went into the student center and did the same thing in there.
Water continued to flow through the walls and floors, soaking portions of the first floor offices. Computers and workstations were damaged before the maintenance staff shut off water after about 15 minutes. 1,000 gallons of water had been released. The sprinkler system triggered an alarm that called the fire department. Hoyt says it was all hands on deck to do what they could to rescue the campus library's collection. Fortunately, those cold temperatures also proved useful.
It was still freezing weather, so that's the best solution for a wet book, is to get it frozen.
Freezing keeps the books from developing mold and mildew. To protect the books that remained indoors, temperatures in the library were kept low. Campus librarian Kathy Bowling says commercial dehumidifiers and high-powered fans were deployed to dry everything out.
You know, if we've got like 70 degree temperatures at like 70% relative humidity for just a couple of days, that could have taken out the entire collection.
That would be 33,000 books. Books were put in carts and boxes based on the extent of saturation and stored outside to keep them cold until a freezer van arrived the next morning. and there they'll remain until a plan is in place to restore them. Some books may be beyond repair. Bowling says they're not sure just how many. UAS's Ketchikan Campus Library has an academic library for its classes and research.
We have such a unique collection. We're going to do our best to salvage what we can and replace what we can, and try not to cry too much during that. This has been a library that's built over decades.
One of the hardest hit areas is the Alaska Native Culture and Language Collection, but Bowling says, fortunately, none of the rarest books were damaged. Bowling describes the painstaking restoration process.
Putting them upright, fanning the pages, and of course this is for a hardback, so I could stand up with fans in the room, not pointed directly at the books, and having a dehumidifier in that room. You know, we'll see a day or two how long it takes for those to dry out, and then book press them.
The UAS Ketchikan staff is consulting with other libraries and experts to determine the best path to take to restore its now frozen collection. Despite the catastrophe, librarians are still checking out books remotely. The building, however, remains closed to the public until further notice. In Ketchikan, I'm Maria Dudzak.
And for KFSK News, I'm Joe Vicnicki.